Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, January 8th, 2019. One official says South Sudan is failing to unify soldiers on time.
We are behind schedule. Today is 8th of January 2019. We are basically left with 3 or 4 more months before the transitional government of national unity is formed.
And some Boer residents who say the governor has rebuffed their complaints over land rights are going to court.
There was a message written by the governor, by hand, with Mr. Governor. He say those residents of Nifaj and Aysalam, they don't have right.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A joint defense board made up of representatives from government and armed opposition groups has met in Juba and says it has identified the first pilot cantonment site. But the board also says it needs nearly $60 million to establish all the cantonment sites needed to form a unified army. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The joint defense board says the first pilot site for cantoning soldiers should be in Kindile, an area of Morobo County in Ye River State. The September revitalized peace deal requires the parties to disengage their forces, assemble them in cantonment areas, and train them as a unified army within the 8 months pre-transitional period before forming a transitional government of national unity in May of this year. But 5 months down the line, none of those things have happened. Today, the board, comprised of military officers and officials from the SPLA-IO and South Sudan Defense Forces, agreed to open one pilot cantonment area where 2,000 unified forces from the government and the armed opposition will be jointly trained. Army spokesman Major General Lul Rai Kwong says the parties must move forward with cantoning troops if the peace agreement is to be implemented in a timely manner.
We are behind the schedule. Today is 8th of January 2019. We are basically left with 3 or 4 more months before the transitional government of national unity is formed. It is not going to be realistic if we do not fast track the process. Therefore, the two army chiefs, the chief of defense forces for SSPDF and the deputy chief of general staff for SPLA-IO, agreed on a model that we will not be in a position to do the phased process, assembling, contorting, and then training. So they have agreed that they are going to do the 3-in-1 at a go, and they have chosen one area. One area for all the forces to report to. They report there, and then they'll be taken through processes.
Kwong says the former warring parties are struggling to raise the money needed to set up more than a dozen proposed cantonment sites.
There was a proposal on having 14. Generally 14, for these 14 to be up and running, to have facilities, medical facilities, water points, shelters. That's the basic requirement. It will require $59 million. And nobody is available to do that, to give us that funding. That's the projection. So the practical problem we have is the problem of funding. What we are going to do on the pilot project is going to be our own demonstration that in as much as we do not have resources, let us make it possible within our means.
Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, the SPLA-IO deputy military spokesman, says the date for assembling forces in the pilot cantonment areas has not yet been fixed, but the opposition is moving forward anyway.
We remain in their positions. The brigade commanders will select those they want to send for the training, and from there they will be screened by the JMCC and will be handed over to the JTSC and to be taken for the training center. So the rest will remain in their own barracks, I mean, in their own bases at the moment.
Gabriel says as this is a pilot project, only 1,000 of the SPLA-IO in Ye River State will be sent to the identified cantonment area in Kindile as they wait for more cantonment areas to be established. The ceasefire transitional security arrangement, monitoring and verification mechanism, or CITISAM, in its sixth meeting in Addis Ababa noted that the former warring parties have made positive progress in implementing the peace deal, but also said the Joint Defense Board has yet to provide sufficient information on the military disengagement and that both the SPLA-IO and the SSPDF forces are still occupying school premises across the country, which should be vacated. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Residents of Bor are suing the Jonglei state government over a land dispute. The residents accuse the state of illegally allotting their plots in Naivasha and Halsalam to government officials and army generals without their permission. Deng Gaideng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Jonglei state officials began surveying and demarcating land, then classifying plots as first class, second class, and third class earlier last year. After the survey was completed, residents say some government officials and rich individuals came to their area with new deeds of title, asking residents to vacate the land they owned. Residents lodged complaints and called on the state authorities to halt the land redistribution, but they say the government ignored their complaints. Now the residents have filed a case against the Jonglei state government in the state high court. Bor resident James Alier says he expects justice to prevail.
When we start negotiate with the government, they told us we should see. Lastly, there was a message written by the government, by hand with Mr. Governor. He say those residents of Naivasha and Halsalam, they don't have right, and then we will see to them where we will locate them. That one we see is unfair. Is unfair, is injustice, is unequality, because we are equal. If you are general or minister and watchman in our estate, we are equal.
Lawyer Michael Mayana Makir, who represents the residents, says his clients have every right to claim their plots of land.
They have a right, seeing they are residing. It was their right, because they reside in the state area before demarcation, before the town plan. They reside in there, and the policy and the principle of the Land Act declare that any residing area or any groups or person hold a customary land right before the commitment of this act shall continue to hold the same. For that purpose, the right was granted in the Constitution, the right was granted in the concerned relevant law, Land Act of 2009.
Mayan says Bor residents own their plots of land regardless of their social status and have the right to continue to live on the land where their families have lived for years. Speaking in Arabic, Augustine Obankur, a legal advisor to Jonglei state government, confirms he has received a letter from the president of Jonglei State High Court summoning him to appear in court next week.
The residents of Naivasha and Halsalam have initiated a court case against Jonglei State government concerning land dispute. We, the state government, are informed about the matter. We received a letter from the High Court and date 18 January 2019 has been fixed for the hearing. I will appear for hearing in the court on behalf of the government.
Many Bor town residents are outraged over the state policy of categorizing residential plots into first, second, and third classes, but residents are most upset about the state officials illegally allotting plots of land to senior government officials and trying to force the poor to relocate to vacant Sharabi Bush land, some 12 kilometers from the town center. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
Residents of Torrid State's Eyasi County say the lack of mobile phone services in the area affects all aspects of their lives. They say ever since a mobile phone operator that serviced the county left some 2 years ago, they can no longer communicate by phone outside the county. Winnie Serino visited the area recently and files this report for VOA from Juba.
Eyasi County resident Onek Jamestoney says South African-owned telecom operator MTN suddenly stopped operating in the area in 2016. And he says when the government shut down major telecom operator Vivacell in March last year, there has not been any telephone network service in Lobone, Pajok, Pogé, Paloa or Obopa Yams.
This affects us in terms of communication. It is very hard for us to actually to communicate from one Payam to another. It has taken us back to use letter. Use letter for communication in case we have something emergency and then we will miss. Like now as we talk, there's some communities that did not get information that the vice president was coming just because there was no network for us to connect.
James Tony says the only things he can use his cell phone for these days is to tell time and to listen to music. He says whenever he needs to communicate with relatives who live outside the county, he must travel from Ayachi County to Magwe County, 40-kilometer ride which costs 1,500 South Sudanese pounds simply to access his mobile phone network. Ayachi County youth leader Jacob Bob points out it's difficult for residents to get help from security agencies outside the county in an emergency situation, which is dangerous, not to mention expensive.
Like MIF, I would have to take message to the youth of Pajok Payam or Lobone Payam at the border. I have to travel from here, maybe a journey of 2 days, footing to reach to their location, and I should put them down in for information for 1 day or for 30 minutes only. So it is also very difficult for me to inform all those youth, because with telephone network it's very easy. In 1 minute or in 2 minutes, I will inform all this location that we have an urgent information for this.
Ayachi resident Anyek Rose says people find it hard to coordinate with clinics and health centers when a relative is sick and needs to be rushed for treatment. And she says farmers in Ayachi County can no longer contact potential buyers for their produce who usually come from outside the region. Rose says she has seen mothers and children die on the road transporting produce to markets in Juba and Tarit.
You may have your produce here to be transported to the market, but you'll have no way to communicate out or to advertise that you have your goods, like we have cooperatives here. We have nowhere to advertise and maybe make people know that there is food here or there is food productions here. They have to come and buy from here. It is us ourselves to carry our food on truck.
Ayachi County Commissioner Charles Okomu says there are few spots where he can access the network, although it is spotty. Okomu says he recently contacted telecom operator MTN and asked them to address the matter.
We have met the MTN company in Juba last month, but they said they will come in January. This January 2019, they made the assessment. Actually, the boosters are there, but during the war, some parts were damaged, and that's why we lost even the communication.
Stephen James, the manager at telecom operator MTN, says his office is often filled with customers who are filing complaints about the poor phone network, and his company is working on the problem.
Yes, we have a plan to go there and put the site on air, but the plan in a process. Network is not like you will go today to the market and then you buy the material ready. You need to order the material from the company and to manufacture the material according to the environment that you have, and it will take time.
The MTN manager says he knows some equipment, including generators and solar panels at some sites, was stolen. He says he plans to send a team to Ayachi County to assess what is needed to fix the network. Yesterday, a group of civil society activists petitioned Information Minister Michael Makwe-Lueth to address the ineffective mobile telephone network across the country. Makwe says subscribers have a right to complain about the poor mobile phone service to the network providers. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What's being done to fight drug and alcohol abuse among African youth? Find out when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands, that is craft work. Making the baskets and doing more of the clay at work.
So I think I will go technology any day, any time. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers, so for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice, so I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today, we're talking about what one African country is doing to counter the effects of drug and alcohol abuse among its young people. A group of concerned Zimbabweans has started an anti-alcohol and drug campaign targeting communities in which unemployed young people resort to drinking and using narcotics to alleviate the stresses of not having any work. As Columbus Mavunga reports for Harare, those involved in the campaign say the solution is tied to improving the country's moribund economy.
Fewer than 3 in 10 young Zimbabweans have steady jobs. Many are idle and see no economic opportunity. For some, that leads to problems with alcohol and drugs. Church leaders, community leaders, and government officials have started warning youth of the impact of drug and alcohol abuse in Zimbabwe and its effects on their physical well-being and mental health. With the drug use growing in Zimbabwe, President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government has called for an all-stakeholders meeting on February 1 to come up with possible solutions. Zimbabwe's Deputy Director of Mental Health Services, Dr. Chidori Wafa, says the government cannot deal with the problem of substance abuse alone.
Alcohol and substance use is a rising problem in all of Africa and also in Zimbabwe, and it's become one of our top 3 diagnoses that we're seeing in our mental health units, so it's becoming a problem. We need a coordinated approach to this problem. It's a multi-sectoral problem, and we need a combined effort between government, between non-governmental organizations, with the community itself. There haven't been many national surveys on this problem, but from other nations, substance use can, it's a combination of factors. It's a multifactorial problem.
Youth are susceptible to peer pressure and can easily gain access to drugs, says Dr. Rwafa. Once hooked on drugs, they also become more likely to engage in criminal activities. 20-year-old Takuzwa Mandija asked us not to film him when he was smoking cannabis. He says drug abuse would fall if more people could find employment.
The best way they can do is to just improve our country economically, such that all those people loitering in the streets will find jobs and will be focused. We are going nowhere. Even if we are to look kuma streets, there are some other people who are damaged. 50% of the youths in the streets, they can't even work. Their life are too distracted by drugs and so forth and the likes. It's not because they want drug abuse.
Roman Catholic priest Claudi Maganga is trying to reduce substance abuse by youths by keeping them busy and offering counseling.
Within our hall, the way it is structured, upstairs we are creating what we call a study center for the young people. And then we have the computers, we have people to come for research, to remove all these young people to come and do researches, have time to interact within the church. We've also started what we call the sports for the young people. We've created volleyball pitch. We've created also a netball pitch here as well for the young people that when they are free, during their free time, they can be engaged in sports everywhere here. So at least with that, we are removing them from being just idle.
While that may help, when young people have finished playing, they still find themselves unemployed and in the same conditions youths like Takuzwa Mandija say make them to drugs. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
A retired South Sudanese senior UN civil servant is urging his country's leaders to fight corruption to break the vicious cycle of violence. Professor Peter Tingwa says the culture of impunity and corruption is to blame for the continued violence across South Sudan.
Well, it is not the international community has ignored, but we have worked ourselves in. The degree of corruption, I don't confirm it, but it is extensive.
How does that lead to conflict?
Because the funds are diverted. People are left without services. You see, people are buying houses somewhere. And others here, John Tanza has bought a house in Australia. Would another Southern be happy that you have been able to buy a house in Australia or somewhere? And he has not been. We are all South Sudanese. So you see, so what makes you more than a citizen? Because you got some money from the state coffers. And that is the thing. I give you an example. Liberia's conflict came from corruption. That's one trouble factor, was not democracy, but corruption. The money that the nation of Liberia was getting from the Freeport, free money like we get free money from the oil, was squandered, was being eaten by those who were in the government, or in that case, by the clique of American Liberians. The American Liberians were the ones benefiting from it, not the rest of the people. And that brought the war.
This revitalized peace agreement is giving a lot of hope to people in South Sudan. And here you are saying, if there are no proper mechanisms, we will go to square one.
Not exactly. But you see, there is no perfect peace. There is no perfect agreement. Every agreement has some weak points. So given that, and given the situation, the RACC or whatever is the only thing we have. So we have to make use of it. But those weaknesses, we must address them. We must look at them. Otherwise, it will spoil the whole thing for us. So I'm not saying that it will not bring the end. Given goodwill, how bad it is, and it will work. But if the goodwill is not there, commitment is not there, then those small issues that has not been addressed well in the agreement will come up and spoil the whole thing.
And you have been monitoring this agreement in your own capacity as somebody who has worked extensively on peacekeeping issues from September 12th, when this agreement was signed, to date. Have you seen any problems?
What I read in the papers is that it is fallen behind. It has fallen behind. And that's unfortunate, because peace agreements usually have timelines. Once you don't fulfill those things in time, they become out of phase completely. And once they are out of phase, then anything can happen. So from what I hear, some positive steps have been taken. Committees have been formed. But these committees need to work to see that the 8 months or whatever months are fulfilled, and the date of the formation of the national government is not delayed. Implementation is time-bound. You leave it, then you give the chance for opportunists to come, different interpretations to arise and everything.
As Professor Peter Tingwa, a South Sudanese retired UN political officer who served at various UN missions across Africa, he was speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Nairobi. Tomorrow, Tingwa talks about what it takes to build a nation. Gabon has closed border crossings with Cameroon since yesterday's attempted coup against President Ali Bongo, halting trade and leaving Gabonese unable to return home. Goods and passengers destined for Gabon are stranded in Cameroon's border town of Kiasi. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports.
Trucks loaded with plantain, cocoyam, granuts and other vegetables sit idle, along with several hundred commuters, in the town of Kiasi on Cameroon's southern border with Gabon. Gabonese businessman Luc Eyene says Gabon's border troops stopped him from crossing over from Cameroon. The government ordered the closure to protect civilians. Eyene says they told him, after Monday's attempted coup against ailing President Ali Bongo.
Je sais que c'est un problème politique. Eux-mêmes, les hommes politiques qui devaient régler ça entre eux.
He says even though Gabon is in a political crisis that could turn violent if Bongo does not recover, it is unpardonable for anyone to seal the border. It is known by everyone that Gabon depends on Cameroon for food, says Eyene. The poor are already suffering after just 24 hours of the border being closed, he says. Traders like Eyene fear their perishable goods will not last until the border reopens. Cameroonian businesswoman Caroline Zifo supplies farm produce to Gabon. She says she was forced to make arrangements to take her goods to Equatorial Guinea instead.
We are just suffering because of the control that are they are blocking Gabonais. There are four control, even more than four. So they are blocking Gabonais. Business is no more moving here in Abamiko.
Hanesson Ketong Konge is the highest ranking Cameroonian official along the border with Gabon. He says they have been discussing reopening the border with Gabonese authorities in the town of Bitam, just across the border.
We are in full discussions with my colleagues in Bitam to see how we can facilitate transit in these border towns.
Sylvanus Mba, a member of Gabon's main opposition group, the Coalition for the New Republic, was traveling in Cameroon when the border was closed. He says his group does not have links with the rebels, but added that many Gabonese, including himself, would have celebrated if the coup had succeeded.
Le Gabon appartient à tous les Gabonais. Ce n'est pas une seule personne qui va durer pendant 50 ans.
He says Gabon belongs to all the people of Gabon, not an individual whose family has ruled for over 51 years and is not showing signs of leaving power even when his health is failing him. Ali Bongo should know that there are very competent citizens of Gabon who can lead the country out of misery, says Mba. The rebel troops appeared on state television early Monday, announcing the coup was intended to restore democracy. But by Monday night, the government of Gabon said it had regained control and arrested seven rebel soldiers. Government forces killed two other soldiers involved in the coup attempt. Authorities also cut the internet and imposed a curfew on Gabon's capital, Libreville. Tanks and armored vehicles were patrolling the city and airports were shut down. President Bongo has been in Morocco since October, receiving treatment for a stroke. He acknowledged having health problems in a New Year's Day message. Bongo succeeded his father Omar Bongo as president in 2009 and narrowly won re-election in 2016 poll, marred by violence and accusations of fraud. His family has been accused of profiting off the country's natural resources while Gabon's 2 million citizens struggle to meet their everyday needs. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Kiosi, Southern Cameroon.
That's it for us today. We leave you with the song Chong Chongo by Neon Jock from Unity State.
Thank you.
listening to Nian Jock from Unity State with the song Chong Chongo. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for being here. If you'd like to share a comment about something you heard on the show, you can find us on Twitter with our handle at VOA South Sudan. If you're planning to be out of Juba and can't tune us in on FM radio, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kilohertz, 13865 kilohertz, and 15180 kilohertz. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.